Welcome back to the 9 till noon show. We're back into the final hour and I am joined now in studio by none other than Brendan Devaney, the presenter of the DL Debate. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning, Michael.
Imagine my. How are you getting on?
Oh, getting on the best. Fresh for a Monday, which is a bit unusual for me.
Is it?
Sunday nights are a problem for me, but I was in best behaviour last night, Michael, because I was going to see you.
I'm sure you knew more than 5 minutes ago that I was in. Anyway, you had an extremely busy weekend. There was lots happening across the county.
Yeah, listen, club championship, it's been very busy, yeah, across the board. When you look at, you know, senior, intermediate, junior, ladies, we just finished up with a hurling last week there as well, Michael. So yeah, a lot of stuff on, a lot of big games on. Of course, the big talking point, senior football, you know, Gidord and Kilcare St Michael's all into that quarter final. They're safe. And then we've got prelims in. So we're out about at the weekend just watching the different teams. And Downing's lost, but they're still in the prelim quarter finals against Sean McCools, who lost to Gidord yesterday. Killy Beggs won in their game. They're playing Neve Connell. Termon play St Unans, which is a repeat of Saturday evening's game. Glenswally play Four Masters. That's the quarter final. Eight teams, the pre-quarter final, Michaela, to get into the quarters, and then you have the playoffs. Then St Noel's are drag, Glenfinn playing a Rua, but of course St Noel's and Glenfinn won in their first games at the weekend. So yeah, a lot of stuff on. Myself and Oisin was over in the centre training centre. They called the centre excellence. I remember Mick McGrath saying to me, mm-hmm. He didn't want to call excellence because he thought that, say, some of the young county players had come in. He wanted it just to be a training centre.
Yeah, if I heard centre of excellence, I would stay clear.
Yeah, you're excellent already. Funny, when we talk about that yesterday, that's often what most of those are called around the country before they came to us, before we had ours. But I remember Mick was the chairman at the time. He says, no, this is just our training centre. It's where you go to get the excellence, maybe, you know.
Yeah. It was funny listening to some of the coverage yesterday, hearing some of the names. I was like, are they not wrecked from playing in the championship? Now they're out in this.
Do you know what? I know what you mean, Michael. Sometimes it seems like the season just seems never ending. Mm. It's game on game. Do you know something? See, when you're in the middle of it, playing is enjoyable. Like the training sometimes probably can get a bit much for people, and the levels have gone up, particularly, say, for our county players that are going into the club. But there's often a different complete feel to the club. You're back in your club players. It's a new sense of the dressing room and the lads, and there's not the same toll probably taken on your body. So many county players, the club season is much more enjoyable.
There's a lot
of pressure on at the county level, a lot of high intensity, you know, be a bit draining. So I think in many ways, I'd say a lot of the county players really love getting back to play with the clubs. And the big thing for me, Michael, is very interesting now. Up until a couple of seasons ago, really, the top teams in Donegal, if they wanted to win a match, they won them, basically, you know. And, you know, outside of them having an off day. But what I'm seeing now is there's a real levelling out between, not just with the rules, but I think a lot of teams have really got their act together around coaching and making the best of the squads that they have. Because I'm looking at that senior, you know, prelim and quarterfinals and the teams in it. And I think nearly everybody in there will say, listen, we could beat the team that we're playing. And up on the a couple of years
great
ago,
great standard.
That wasn't the case yet. The championship was probably a wee bit, listen, it was very obvious who was going to maybe be in the final and maybe who's going to win it. And of course, there still is some teams in there that would be favourites. But I'm looking around to say all those teams that are in that prelim quarter final and that are left at the top, I don't think any of them on a given day couldn't beat the other teams. So it should be.
It's great for the spectators as well.
Aye. Well, it's got the knockout now, Michael. I think when the championship started there, I was watching a few games and a few minutes in, you're like, is this championship? Because where Donegal teams are still a wee bit now, in terms of possession and backing off, we don't maybe see teams going for each other a lot in the games. Now, there will be sporadic plays and maybe late on when the pressure's come on. So I was looking at a few games early on thinking, is this championship? But as it's got into it, you know, I suppose it's first year with the new rules. So it's evolving, but it's certainly, say, is much more exciting right across the board, right into the intermediate and junior as well.
Yeah, so plenty to look forward to in the coming weeks. But this evening? What have we got to look forward to?
Yeah, John Galdea's joining us, former Niamh Collins stalwart, of course, Donegal star. We're going to run across all the big games, all the big talking bunch. Oney McGarvey is on as well. Oney's a coach here in Donegal with Niwara. He also does work for Radio Nigeldic, so he's a great pundit. He's always well clued in. So we're going to discuss all the games from yesterday and Saturday, and of course into these pairings and the playoffs, the prelim quarterfinals as well. And on top of that, my buddy Aaron Kiernan's going to be on the show.
He's the new Mayo coach.
He's actually joined up with Meath.
Meath,
yes, yes,
right.
Yes, yes. Unless you've heard something, I haven't.
No, just reading the sheet, Brian.
Maybe he's coming late. We've seen this with different players there in the Premier League. They look.
You
like
never
going,
know. Transfer window
in.
And all
yeah,
that.
Yeah. No, he's actually joined up by Robbie Brennan. Took him in. He was in at Sligo last year. And he's obviously crossed McLean. So it's interesting out there, Michaela, just different coaches are getting taken to different places and how that influences the squad and the setup, because everybody, no more than we were talking about our clubs, there's great coaching going on, there's great management teams across our seniors. Every county out there is trying to pull in different people to maybe add that wee bit of
And value. I always, probably my naivety, thought that, you know, the coaching team and the manager was all from the county, of the team's county, but it's not. Has it always been like that?
No, it would never have been. You would never have got coaches that weren't from the county. I think just as time goes on, if you look at it, particularly when you had this real revolution in GAA, when it became, you know, so high profile, particularly Celtic Tiger times and that, a lot of money came into the sport. You had a lot of Irish people were doing well, and then the next thing they started to contribute into. Now, there's a lot of question marks about that at the minute. Charles Burns is saying, right, there needs to be a cap on this, because we've heard a lot of stories about a lot of big money out there. And in many ways, I suppose, Michaela, it's a bit unfair than the other counties.
Yeah, that's it.
Because it used to be a thing years ago, you had a bag of balls and a football pitch, and may the best team win.
Yeah.
But my God, there's been some changes.
But it shows the hunger for teams now that they want to progress, and that, you know, they want to get that top spot.
Yeah, that's it. And it just, as I say, if you look at different times, I suppose from our own county, whenever Jim comes back in there and you see the big push and everybody wants to help and dig out and do stuff and that, and that's fantastic for us at the time. We are a football mad county. There's great support to our team in that. But sometimes then if you go up against another county and they haven't got the same financial resources, then the playing field's not that even, though it's never ever going to be completely even. But for years there, Michael, if you looked at the biggest, say, money generating teams in the country, they were also the teams that were at the top all the time.
Yeah.
Now, was that just because of the love of the sport in the county or whatever? But I think in some ways there probably has to be some kind of levelling out of what's been paid, because...
But that cap would be fair.
It would be. Again, I suppose it's a difficult enough thing to police, I think, as well. But yeah, if you look at it now, let's say a county really wanted our gym, they could say, right, here's an offer you can't refuse, because they have the money. And I think that's probably something that's maybe a bit unfair out there. But listen, it's a difficult thing to police, but he's our gym for now, so leave him alone.
That's the warning going out anyway from Brendan Devaney. Leave him alone. But it just shows how, you know, nearly commercialised the sport's gotten, that it has come to that stage.
Yeah, well, it's big business. You know, when you look at it, I suppose, you know, and I was never happy with the redevelopment of Croke Park in terms of the way it went about. Like, there's 11,000 corporate seats at Croke Park, you know. They more or less modelled the stadium in the Emirates in Arsenal, which that is a business. Like, and I always tell myself, that's not how the GAA should have been.
It's crazy then when it comes to All-Ireland final and the amount of people that miss out on tickets.
That's it. I suppose, when it's a showpiece day like that, but all sports is like that. You know, if you look at any sport, if it's a big, big game, everybody wants to be there. And listen, there's plenty of tickets going All-Ireland final morning now. Right. I was up, I was on the hunt, and I got so many, I was telling people then, no, I don't need them.
Right.
So I had a load of people to get tickets for.
So you're the man to get in contact.
Well, actually, my good wife, Pertrasa, was actually doing the majority of it, because I was caught up in a few media things. So she was running
managing it.
Croke Park Hotel coming out of night, Michaela. But yeah, listen, as I say, just there is that nature, I suppose. It's a very difficult balancing act for the GAA, because it is amateur. but yet there is a lot of money involved in it. And then, you know, you have, depending on what club and what county, there's more money in it. So I think if there can be some evening out around that, I think most clubs and counties want to have their own management in place. You don't want to be going to other counties, but sometimes you have to.
Mm. Anyway, the DL debate is on after the 7 o'clock news this evening, and it will be available online to listen back to as well.
Brendan, much appreciated.
Thanks
Carol,
so much.
Thank you.
Highland Radio Time Checks, brought to you by Airgrid, the operator and developer of Ireland's electricity grid. Airgrid, powering up communities, powering up Ireland. The time is...
The time is now exactly 17 minutes past 11. Now, a listener was in touch earlier and they were asking, did anybody know about flags being put up in Convoy and the Diamond area of Raphoe? I'm joined now by Joe. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks. So you live in the Convoy area and a few tricolours have appeared there, have they?
That's correct. I was down the street this morning and discovered that a whole pile of tricolours have been erected overnight on lampposts up the main street in Convoy.
Mm. And it's very intimidating. We don't know what is behind this as of yet, but it is intimidating. You know, people like to fly the national flag, but this being carried on out under the guise of nightfall does make it intimidating.
Well, it does. I mean, I'm as proud an Irishman as the next person and as proud of my flag, but I don't like to see it used in this way because, you know, flags weren't erected here before. Convoy's a lovely place to live. We have a lot of nationalities here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in my mind, this is designed to intimidate people who have fled here.
Okay.
From war situations, from persecution, and people erect flags overnight in the dark of night.
Yeah.
You know, they wouldn't put them up during the day, they do it in the dark of night. And to, in my mind, it's solely to intimidate non-national people.
Yeah, and that is, you know, not acceptable in any form, in any community at all, to do this. Has it happened before, Joe, or is just overnight it's happened?
Well, it's happened overnight. There's quite a lot of flags have gone up this time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you mentioned there, I mean, Irish people have been discriminated against for years in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
We all remember in England, you know, the signs going up on the windows, you know, no blacks, no dogs, no Irish. We had immigrant people ourselves who went to America and different countries and were on the receiving end of discrimination.
Yeah.
And I think we've forgotten largely who we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is meant to be a country of 100,000 welcomes, Cead Mille Volta.
Yeah.
And people have arrived here from, you know, unimaginable circumstances. You know, and all of a sudden now, you know, we have people, you know, putting up these flags. And, you know, the Irish flag, it's a wonderful thing. We're all proud of it, but not when it's used like this.
Yeah, exactly. And those people that are coming here and fleeing violence, as you outlined, they don't necessarily want to be here in Convoy. There's nothing wrong with Convoy, but they'd far rather be at home as well. And then it's so difficult for them to, you know, integrate into a completely new life here. But to be met with that then, as you say, and, you know, a lot of people like claim to be representing the entire Irish nation, and that's not the case.
Oh, not at all, not at all. They certainly don't speak for me.
Mm.
And I would imagine there are a lot of other people here. I mean, I can only speak here in Convoy, of course. But there are a lot of other people here in Convoy, and they don't speak for them either. You know,
absolutely.
And I think, you know, I mean, it's basic humanity. I don't know what has gone wrong, you know, but over this last year or two, and it's worldwide, we have this almost extreme nationalism and anti anybody who wasn't born in the country.
Mm.
You know, and if we look back, far enough in our own history. You know,
yeah, a lot of people
maybe
fled.
Some of us have come from other places too, you know.
Mm.
And I think it's very unfair and it's frightening.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, for people who are scared anyway. As you say, they probably don't want to be here either.
Yeah.
But they found themselves in this situation. And, you know, we've had reports recently. You saw up in Dublin there a couple of weeks ago, an Indian doctor attacked overnight.
Yeah, I know. And you were just,
you know, on his way home from work.
Hate that to happen on our doorsteps.
Just make you a, Well, Michaela, walk into any health facility in this country, and if you didn't have non-national workers, you'd be chronically understaffed.
Yeah, the argument has been made many times that they keep our health system going.
Well, we don't have, we only for them. I mean, it's under severe pressure as it is. Mm. So what would it not be like if you didn't have them?
Yeah, I know.
You know, and I mean, recently, I mean, you know, if you're in Dublin and you go on the Dart or the bus or the trains or any of the public transports, you know, it's non-national people that are staffing there. They're doing the jobs.
Yeah.
You know, and there are people, you know, there are people who want to make a contribution, who want to live here, who want to pay their taxes, who want to join in an Irish society. And yet I feel, you know, there's an element certainly that doesn't want them here, yeah, but aren't offering any alternative to it either.
Exactly, I know. Well, Joe, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Thank you. Yeah, as we were mentioning, a few tricolours have appeared overnight, Joe was saying, in the Convoy area, and another listener was saying in the Diamond area of Raphoe. Joe believes it is being done to intimidate non-nationals. Hopefully that isn't the case, but, you know, it's done at night and nobody knows the identity of those erecting the flags, and it is a sad situation. I've heard, you know, in another area as well that, not particularly in Donegal, you know, a Union Jack has been placed up on a lamppost outside certain properties to, they believe they see it as an act and a way of discouraging non-nationals from purchasing a house in that area, or if they're offered a social home in that area as well. And just to think that people think that you know, that's the right thing to do, but it's absolutely not, to be intimidating anybody at all. A few more of your comments now. My daughter was out shopping in Derry and parked in a shopping centre. A lady crashed into her, and as a result, three other cars were damaged. The insurance company are only paying her half the cost of repairing her car. Does she have any rights? When she contacted the owners of the car park, they said you park at your own risk, but if you pay, surely that expires. These signs they post. Does anyone know? Her car is only 2 years old and is now a write-off. Don't have great experience in this, but I do think that if you have the sign up that you park at your own risk, that the car park isn't liable in that instance. Just listening to Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh, can I ask, are hidden disabilities included here in the mental health services, i.e. mental health services in Donegal? Jimmy was talking about the national strategy that has been published, and I'm sure you can find out more information online about that. I'm just not 100% sure about that. Another listener says, why would people be offended by a tricolour? I think flags are intimidating. You know, if they're in government buildings, that's fine, you expect them there. But, you know, no matter what flag it is, I find them intimidating, particularly if you're not from the area, you know, and you're maybe new to the area, or say if you're visiting somewhere, it is difficult as well. You don't know what the flag means. I know a lot of people will know what the tricolour means, but in terms of, you know, if you're new to the area, it's very, very difficult. The speed signs in Lurgy Brack, this listener says, there are four or five signs with 60 kilometres an hour. This was there for the works and are still there. Is this going to be permanent reduction, or are they signs that just haven't been lifted yet? I am joined now by Michael McInerney, parent of the late Annabelle, and we're speaking on Monday Focus in relation to Annam Cara. Good morning to you, Michael.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Good.
So I should have Leanne as well, actually, just we'll get her in. So, Michael, have you benefited from Annam Cara? I know you lost your daughter, Annabelle.
That's correct, yeah. So this week, I guess, Michelle, is a rather poignant moment because her anniversary is coming up on this week, the 11th. No, it's 18 years ago. And time, as they say, is a healer.
Yeah.
But she's very much a significant part of my family's life still. She was our fourth child, and I guess when these things occur. They're unexpected, and thankfully they are rare, but they probably shouldn't be happening. But it did come along as quite a bolt of the blue. She was diagnosed with cancer at the age of 10 months. Significance of it, it was a tumor at the top of her spine. She was too young to operate. It didn't have enough blood in her system, I suppose, and she was too young as well for other forms. They did try some form of chemotherapy, which gave us a few months extra. She had lost the movements in her arms and legs, but the chemotherapy reduced the size of the tumor at the top of her spine, so she got her movement back in the limbs. That was wonderful, actually. Very precious to us those few months.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
But then the disease spread down along her spine and up into her brain, and so she passed on the 11th of September, so that's all 9/11, I guess. So in terms of where Anne Carr fitted in, I guess, you saw the immediate shock. You were just in shock. You're walking around. You know, we brought her home. She was the Royal Victoria Hospital in Belfast. And I'm just thinking there beforehand. We brought her home that night at the 11th and we put her in the bed between us and strangely had a very long, deep sleep. Whether it was the exhaustion or not, I don't know. And bizarre. But then you wake up to the nightmare, which became... Yeah. Very recurrent in the weeks and months afterwards. We're great in Ireland, I think, at funerals and wakes and passing and supporting and community. And certainly, I can't fault my immediate family and friends all around supporting us in the aftermath.
But we find it very difficult to ask for that help when we need it. Then,
yes. Well, I guess. It's because it's unnatural, I suppose, the loss of a person. It's not the natural order that somebody, you know, Annabelle should have outlived me, you know, and that wasn't to happen. And so, therefore, you find the non-bereaved, as we'd call them, you know, it's difficult for them. It's not their fault, but it's very difficult for them to continue that discussion where we want to talk and remember Annabelle. And maybe they, you know, many people just, you know, do get on with their lives afterwards. And which is okay. And for us then, it was a case of just trying to deal with it as a family, as a dad. You assume the mantle of you know, I'm in charge of the house. I'll deal with this. But as the months went by, it became clear as there was a huge darkness. We had other children as well, and trying to get them back to school. And Maria, like, was just in, that's my partner, Maria, my wife. She was in bits, you know, and trying to manage it all and cope and support. It was really difficult and very, very challenging. And you go through, you know, lots of processes, and your anger comes in because you really are annoyed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, this isn't right, like, you know.
Yeah.
So it was very, very tough. And we were looking for something. I did try a few numbers, and there were services that were no longer available.
Okay.
But thankfully, somebody came into our house and says, they told us first of all about an event down in Barrettstown in County Kildare for families who've lost a child to an illness, and we went there, and we heard about Anne and Cara, and even there to begin with, meeting other families who'd lost children, that was the beginning of getting an understanding to the chaos that we were living in at that time, because truly, I guess, the benefits of Adam Cartwright is other families who've lost a child and they understand what you're going through.
And how helpful was that, as helpful as it could be, Michael, to meet with families who were in the same kind of situation?
I guess initially there was trepidation. You know, Maria was certainly wanted something, you know, she wanted to talk. I was more resistant, I guess, to that, in the sense that, you know, I wasn't a believer, I suppose. I wanted still to, you know, manage the situation.
Yeah.
But even the first night, I remember we'd have driven anywhere, to be honest.
Yeah.
We drove down to Dublin, and that's where we met the founder of Anne Cara at that event. And it was just, there was a feeling when you walked into that room, there was something calming. And then we sat down next to another couple, and you share your story, and you know, other stories are just as tragic as ours. And then you realize you're amongst people who understand. It felt up to that point that nobody understood.
Yeah.
And nobody seemed to have answers for us. We wanted answers, you know. I'm not sure they're still there, you know,
no.
But at least we met people who understood. And that's very powerful in terms of an employer. And indeed, Sharon Broward, who set the organization up, she also lost her child, and she was just a great benefit in the beginning to help us make sense of that chaos. And then we continue to go to those meetings. And there's something also very powerful about hearing others,
mm-hmm.
you know, and hearing their experiences. And I guess it's finding out and sharing the coping mechanisms.
Yeah.
You know, and lots of things. And that's where I got some of the coping mechanisms that I still use up to now about how I deal with Annabelle's passing.
Yeah.
And it was Peter, and he lost his son as well, also to cancer. And he was saying he tried to go back to work, and his son was always in his mind every day.
Yeah.
And I was the same with Annabelle. She was there in every waking moment, you know. And I says, how do you deal with that? How do you, you know, how it's constant there. And you, I have other children that need my love and affection as well. And he said he spoke to his son each day on his picture on their mantelpiece,
right.
And says, I'm going off to work now, but I won't be forgetting you, and I'll come back and talk to you again soon. And I adopted that, and I live here near Loch Ness, you know, on the south shore of it. And that's what suddenly in the very beginning every day, I used to go down there in the morning and look across Loch Ness and just talk to Annabelle, openly. And that was a great, great, great comfort.
Yeah,
you know?
And that's lovely, because I'm sure, you know, in that moment, it's hard to figure out how you're going to get over this. You never will get over it, but how you can cope with it. And, you know, as you say, there's so many different coping mechanisms, but just to find that right one that suits yourself and, you know, allows Annabelle to remain part of your life.
Yeah, that is it, I think. And it's important what you say there as well. Remember, it grief is individual.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it just, again, there's the challenge as well for couples, you know, just because, you know, you've built up a family, you've gone through everything together. We went through her illness together.
Yeah.
We support each other through that. But grief is a funny fellow. You know, he'll only hit you. And there are times when Maria was okay and I was down low and vice versa.
Yeah.
You can imagine as well that brings tension into a relationship. So to try and hear that as well, that was natural, you know, you need to hear it because you're going through it. And if you don't hear it, and then when you find out from others, this is a normal part of the process. And that was true. And then Cara as well. And it is, as you say, it's building up those coping mechanisms and to know when those triggers happen. And it's a funny thing. You go long day to day, it still occurs now that I'll be maybe in the kitchen cooking and Annabelle will come into my head.
Yeah.
And there'll be a lot of emotion and they'll say, oh, love, what do you want now? You know, something like that.
Yeah.
And then she'll go away. So you never know. When it comes, it'll hit your heart, like, you know, but it's just to understand that maybe she's just saying hello and stuff because, I mean, I'm
and
very,
that's such a comfort spiritual. As well. Yeah.
It is. I'm very spiritual, believe. I do think she's all about us at times. She's there to support us. And when I look at my other children, we had two more children afterwards, so they brought a lot of light into the house. And our youngest, Francesca, you know, she's the one now that writes the cards that we would send out, birthday cards, etc. And, you know, she puts all our names and all of her brothers and sisters' names, and she puts Annabelle always in the cloud in the card as well. So she's still very much part of the family. And, you know, that's all. I mean, you know, Anna Carr is certainly, you know, I can without a shadow of a doubt say the impact on it. It's that sharing of your stories, of your journeys and journeying together, that we're all in this together and we can get through it. And that, you know, every day is another step forward, you know, on the journey. But it's important as well that we celebrate and remember those children that we've lost.
Yeah. I'm joined now as well by Leanne Mulligan, who is the Services Director with Annam Cara. Leanne, how important is it to be able to provide this kind of support to the likes of Michael?
Michaela, thank you for having us on, and thanks again to Michael for always sharing so generously about Annabelle. But I think Mac has really answered that question there of the importance of these services for all the parents across Ireland. That peer-to-peer support helps, I suppose, the parents who are in this living nightmare, as Michael has said, to kind of normalise what they're feeling at that particular time, and to help them through those really, really darker days, and to let them know that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and, you know, you will live again. As Max said, they, you know, Annabelle visits him when she pops up every now and again. And it's supposed to be able to share those journeys and those milestones with other parents who understand what you're going through is just vital.
And for anybody who is unfamiliar with Annam Cara, what kind of support do you deliver?
Yeah, so we are an all-Ireland organisation, Michaela, and we have 14 groups across the country, and they are peer-to-peer support groups for bereaved parents. We also deliver these supports in an online setting as well. So we run those once a month for parents who may not be able to travel to our different locations. And we also offer information evenings, and we're in Donegal tomorrow evening and Wednesday morning as well. So tomorrow evening in the Inishowen Gateway Hotel in Buncrana, we are holding a bereavement information evening for bereaved parents, and that is at 7 p.m. tomorrow evening. And we are also holding an event on Wednesday morning for professionals. So this is a different type of event, actually. It's for anybody who is working in the community that come into contact with bereaved families through their job. And it's so important for those people working on the front line with these bereaved families to know what services are available to them and what services to signpost them to. Because, you know, Annam Cara and lots of other organisations are working across the country to support these parents. But we need the people on the ground to know where to signpost to and what services are available to these parents. And I suppose our vision in Annam Cara is that every family throughout Ireland will have the relevant bereavement support services that they need following the death of their son or daughter.
And it's important too for the rest of the family as well. As Michael discussed, you know, he has a number of other children, so that support for the siblings is important as well, Leanne.
That's right. So we're supporting the parents primarily to, I suppose, enable them to go home and support their own children. We would also run a number of events, and Michael actually spoke about one of them there, our Barrettstown Family Picnic that takes place twice a year. And that is open to all of the family members. So the siblings can come along, Nana and Grandad, aunts and uncles and cousins. They're welcome to join us on that particular day in Barrettstown. And we also run some remembrance events throughout the year as well, primarily in November. It would be one in the Midlands this year in the Hudson Bay, and we're also running one in Munster, and that's available for all the families, including the siblings, to come to as well.
And Michael, in terms of that sibling support, how beneficial did you find that?
I guess when I reflect back on it, for them as well, you know, as they get older now, they do. I ask them about, you know, what was the experience like for them, and one of, I suppose, the loving kind of aspects of it as well is that their concern was for their mum and dad.
Yeah.
But I do remember at one of those events that Leanne has talked about on Barrettstown, the picnic, when other families are there, and we have our picnic, and then there's sort of some events around. It's a wonderful estate that we're very grateful that they allow Annam Cara to come in there. And so there's some activities, and I remember my oldest boy coming back and he's saying, I was playing with this other boy and he lost his sister too. Oh. And so many ways, the mirroring of what the adults experience and sharing the experience happened to the children as well. And I think, you know, because naturally enough, if you think back, in their primary school, you know, in the aftermath of Annabelle's passing, they did feel the fact that they were being sort of maybe watched and being cared for. So, and because they were unique, because maybe there was no other passing in the school of a sibling or a young child like that. So this normalising of it, that it's not, you're not freaks or you're not strange, is really, really important, I think, too, you know, for young children.
Because,
you know,
I imagine for yourself, following Annabelle's passing, you know, as parents, you're going through that grief, but I'm sure you are worried about your other children as well. It's very hard to balance that.
Very hard, very hard. And you know, certainly in the beginning, I know, Maria, my wife, will mind me saying that she would say she was sometimes, you know, lying in bed just distraught, and I just want her back. I don't want anybody else. I just want her back. And then for me to try and say, well, there's all the children, you know, and they need our love as well as much, and you've got to try and balance that.
Yeah.
And that does take a while to process, naturally enough. And you do have to worry about them as well, and the effect and the impact it has on them. But certainly in the case of my family, I suppose I can only say that they've been great. It's been tough. It's been tough watching them. It's been tough watching the older tree tell the younger tree about Annabelle. So it's both loving and heartrending. So, but
And Leanne, remind us again about the events taking place in Donegal.
Yeah, so tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. we'll be meeting in the Inish Own Gateway Hotel in Buncrana. And this evening is for any bereaved parents to join us. It's an information evening. We have Georgia Howard, the Clinical Director of First Light, which is another organisation that support bereaved families around the country. And she will be there to share her thoughts on what to expect after your child has died, the grieving process, milestones, and I suppose just to share as well. We will also be joined by Olive Morrissey as well on the day, and I suppose there'll be a Q&A session as well, so there'll be plenty of time for people to ask questions that they may have around their journey that they're going through at the moment. And if they would like to get in touch to register for that event tomorrow, they can call us on 085 2888 888. And similarly then on Wednesday morning we are meeting at 10 a.m. for any professionals who would like to join us. And again, it's Georgia Howard will give her input again on Wednesday morning around how you can support bereaved families that you are working with in the community. Both events are free, I should add, actually, and we would love to see as many people there as possible.
Leanne Mulligan, Services Director with Annam Cara, thank you so much for joining me this morning, as well as Michael. It was lovely that you could share your story of Annabelle, and I wish you all the very best. Thank you so much for joining me this morning, both of you. Now, yesterday, unfortunately, there was a two-car collision at the Ballyratton area of Redcastle yesterday afternoon at around 2:45 p.m. Now, unfortunately, this area is an area that there has been serious safety concerns raised about in the past. I'm joined now by Councillor Martin Farn. Good morning to you, Councillor.
Good morning, Michaela. How are you?
Good.
Thanks
so,
for inviting me on your show.
No problem. Thank you for joining us. But unfortunately, this is an area that you've raised concern over before.
I have indeed. And first of all, our thoughts are with the two people that have been injured, and I do hope that they make a full recovery. The area that you're talking about is known locally as Clare Corner, and it's been an ongoing problem now, Michaela, for many, many years, and it's something that has to be addressed. I have, on a number of occasions, made different motions within Donegal County Council at full council meetings, and had the full support of all the councillors in relation to this matter to have it resolved. And in fairness to the hierarchy in the road section of Donegal County Council, it did go to the NTA, the National Transport Authority, but as yet no funding has been made available. And, you know, this is something that really, you know, has to be addressed, because it's a very, very serious situation. I have had put speed counters have gone down there on numerous occasions. And in some occasions, I'm not saying now that this accident was caused by speed. I'm definitely not saying that, because I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I have no idea what happened there. I've been speaking to a few people, and they think what may have happened. You can only, you know,
surmise.
There was very heavy
rain
yesterday afternoon, and we think possibly the road could have been slippery, but I don't know. I haven't the full details on that. We have a full MD meeting in Carndonagh tomorrow, and I'll be speaking to senior road engineers in relation to this again.
Councillor Farr, back in 2021, you were speaking out because the council did agree to erect temporary signage there at Clare Corner. Is this temporary signage still in place, or were those works carried out at the time?
I have spoken so many times with engineers and that it's ongoing. What they did for me was we put up driver feedback signs.
okay.
on either side of the corner, basically asking people to be careful and do travel at 50 kilometres an hour over that stretch of road.
Mm-hmm.
I also got them to put down what we call anti-skid material on the road at the time as well. And to be honest with you, Michaela, there's very little else that you can do.
Okay.
What has to be done, and there's no other solution to this problem, the road needs to be realigned.
Mm-hmm.
And that is from Clare Corner, the other side of Clare Corner on the Derry side, up as far as the Ballyratton Road. That road has to be... Now, I was speaking to engineers some time ago, and I'm going back before my time in the council, and I'm there 16 years now. There was talking plans then of realigning that road from the village of Redcastle up past Ballyratton, but that never materialised and money was never made available.
Okay.
And
so is this an issue of funding from national government that is the issue?
It is, of course, yes, yeah. Now, look, this is a very busy road. You know, it's busy all year round, and especially during the summer months, it's extremely busy. You know, so this issue has to be addressed, because I would be fearful if someone is seriously injured there or worse, and that's, you know, that's the scenario, that's the situation we have there at that corner.
Mm.
Money, I don't care where they get it from, but money needs to be made available to address that problem there. I will be continuing to speak about it. I will be speaking to the engineers about it, and they do take my concerns on board, but yeah. We seem to have a serious problem in convincing the department in allocating funding for such a project like that. And I all I can do as a public representative, and I am the type of person that whenever I, you know, an issue, dealing with an issue, I like to get a positive outcome from it, and I'm finding this one very, very difficult indeed to address, and that is getting that funding. But I will be speaking to senior engineers tomorrow again at our MD meeting in Carndon in relation to this issue.
Because this is an issue as well, trying to get this funding, you know, covering so many mm-hmm. council meetings over the years, you know, yourselves as councillors yes. raise these issues. The council is happy to carry out investigations and to draw up a report on what is needed. But time and time again, that seems to be the stumbling block, is that, you know, they can't secure the funding, or if there's a scheme that they think this particular route is eligible for, it doesn't succeed, so they have to wait till, you know, the scheme opens again. Do you think there needs to be something done where you can prioritise certain routes?
I do, certainly. I would fully agree with you there. Unfortunately, there's so many motions, as you possibly know yourself, and different councillors bring them up at our full council meetings in Lifford. And to be perfectly frank, we say they go nowhere.
Mm,
you know,
yeah.
We never seem to get an answer to the problem. But I, since my time on the council, I'm born and reared here, and I know the seriousness of that corner. I mean, I would drive it nearly most days myself, to be honest with you. And this is why I had speed, got them to put up the driver feedback signs, anything that I could possibly do in the interim period to try and slow traffic down and try to let people know just how dangerous a corner is and to go at a certain speed. But in some cases, I've had these speed counters down, and in some cases I would have been surprised at some of the speeds that some people were going at, and they were quite high, to be honest with you, over the years. You know, there were some heavy traffic going at some very heavy speeds, you know. And but I'm not saying now I don't know this accident.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it could have possibly happened maybe with the road being slippery. I'm not for one minute saying that it was speed at all. Definitely not.
But you particularly know, as Donegal is becoming, you know, somewhat of a hotspot for tourists and, you know, staycationers, yeah. It's important that the correct signage, the correct, you know, safety common measures are put in place for all motorists.
Absolutely, I agree with you, but as I said, in relation to Clare Corner, I've done really as much as I possibly can there. There's not really anything else you can do. We've got the anti-skid material down, we've got the driver feedback signs either side of the corner asking people to go at 50 kilometres an hour on that stretch of road.
Yeah, it's just not nice.
The only other alternative there, Michaela, you know, and if someone can come up with another idea, I'd certainly listen to it, but the only other alternative there is the road needs to be realigned to solve the problem. And that was on the agenda a number of years ago by Donegal County Council, but for some reason, again, I think it was all down to funding.
Yeah.
It never happened. But I will, in my period of time now in the council, I'm into my second year now in this term, I will be bringing up again, and I will be asking for the support, obviously, which I will get from my fellow councillors in relation to this matter, because they know the seriousness of the problem as well as myself. But being a local councillor, it's my job to bring it up at every possible time that I can, while I'm speaking to the engineers, and to keep it on their agenda and try and get funding for that corner. There's no other solution rather than the road being realigned. I can't see any other alternative.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that solution is secured. Councillor Martin Farrant, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
The 9 till noon show is brought to you by Letterkenny Credit Union. Digital loans now available. Apply online or via our app today and get your loan transferred directly to your current account.
Get the job done with the right equipment delivered direct from Watson Hire in Letterkenny. Free delivery on all equipment has been extended to the Finn Valley area, including Ballybuffet, Stranorler, Castle Finn and Killygordon. With great daily and weekend deals available, call Watson Hire, Listen In and Letterkenny on 916-7777. See Facebook or visit watsonhire.ie.
Hello, Jedward speaking. Sorry, Edward speaking.
Hey, bro, I'm glad you picked up.
Who is this?
It's me, John. I'm literally outside in the landing.
I don't know any Sean. Lose my number. Hello?
Edward, don't hang up. I'm sorry for saying a handyman could fix the gas boiler. Please forgive...
Always use a registered gas installer, or you could risk everything. Find one at rgi.ie.
This week at Dunn Stores, get half price and better than half price on your favourite brands. Pick up selected cereals like Kellogg's Cocoa Pops and Special K, now better than half price. Get selected Kids Innocent Smoothies 4-pack or Dairylea Dunkers Jumbo Tubes 3-pack half price. And snacks like Kellogg's Rice Krispie Squares 4-pack range and Belvita Milk and Cereals 540-gram, also half price. Plus, save more with your 10 off 50 or 5 off 25 vouchers. Dunn Stores, always better value. Terms and conditions apply. Vouchers can be used on next grocery shop.
Get ready, Donegal. The big Highland Bingo Party is here.
On Saturday the 29th of November, the Villa Rose Hotel Ballybuffet transforms into the wildest Christmas party of the year.
Hosted by me, Keith Fletcher, Lee Gooch and Marty Freel on the decks.
Think festive cocktails, classic party anthems, ridiculous games, of course, and mad bingo mayhem.
Loads of prizes on the night with a €1,000 top cash prize up for grabs.
You better be quick. Tickets are on sale. Grab yours on Eventbrite or check out highlandradio.com.
The Big Highland Bingo Party. Over 18s.
Ha ha! It's bingo, but not as you know it.
Highland Radio weather updates brought to you by McIlhenny's. With new season styles arriving daily, discover the latest fashion, footwear and accessories for autumn in store or shop online at McIlhenny's.com today.
Today's weather, scattered showers will move in and become more widespread through the morning, turning heavy at times with a slight chance of isolated thunderstorms, highest temperatures of 14 to 16 degrees. Just to finish with a couple of your comments or your chat about the presidency. In these days of people struggling, has nobody ever thought of the costs involved in having a president? 3 to 4 million euro annually, and if that's value for money, ask this listener. Plus the cost of running to be elected, what does the president actually do apart from turn up at Croke Park and other sporting events? Complete waste of time and money. Think of the bicycle shelters you could build. Or even better, turn his residence into an iPass centre would be useful then, says this listener. Well, the president does sign the law, so he does have a role to play in terms of what does happen in this country. Another listener says Mary Lou McDonald and Piers Doherty are far more valuable within the Dáil than in the Áras. The government are not in tune with the Irish people. Is it true that the government have given themselves a pay increase and have not decided to cut the have now decided to cut the cost of living bonuses of the less off people in the country? They now have more worries. How are they going to heat their homes? Says this listener. The fuel allowance is €33 per week starting at the end of September. This has been this amount for years. It hasn't gone up yet. The cost of fuel, such as coal and electricity, has. The government is more in tune with the rich in Ireland than with the less well off people. Thanks to everyone who got in touch with the show today. That's where we have to leave it for now. Thanks so much to Donna Marie Doherty for producing this morning. I'm getting mixed up in my mornings and afternoons. John Breslin is up now on Round the Northwest just after the news at 12. Good morning.